Are you looking for a Columbus car dealership built on tradition and trust? Buyers Auto, family-owned since 1897, offers top new and pre-owned vehicles. Visit us or shop online at buyersauto.com. Buyers Auto, driving the next generation of buyers.
0141-951-1025. It's time to talk football. It's Clyde One Super Scoreboard.
Good evening and welcome to Clyde One Super Scoreboard as we look back on a potentially pivotal weekend in the Scottish Premiership title race. Celtic lose at Dundee United to fall 5 points behind leaders Hearts. To make matters worse for Martin O'Neill's side, its Rangers are above them now into second after a convincing 4-1 win against Aberdeen. And to lead it all off, the Jambos did get the job done at the weekend, meaning they are still in the driving seat for now. Lots happening tonight. I'm Gordon Duncan, and joining me on your Monday evening, you've got Scott Allen. You're Roger Hanna tonight. Don't know how that makes you feel.
Oft.
And Andy Halliday. Old school pals reunited. Look
yeah,
at the two
feels
of you.
Good. Feels a bit weird, but good at the same time. Is there going to be a straightforward Monday? Because nope. I can't remember the last one. And it's been so many twists and turns throughout this domestic season, and it was this time it was Celtic's turn to slip up yesterday at Tannadice. A lot of chat about the pitch, not a great pitch, but tell you what, it wasn't a great Celtic performance either. And Rangers and Hearts got their job done on Saturday, and we're all set for a huge remainder of the season.
Yeah, that's a huge result for Hearts again, obviously showing that resilience. They've lost games and then bounced back the following week, so a huge win for them. Rangers, a really convincing performance against a very poor and a team who I think are in real trouble now, Aberdeen. And Celtic, yes, I thought it was going to be a tricky game. I said that on Friday. The pitch, obviously, you take that into account, but performance-wise, it was a very low bar from Celtic, and Dundee United were fully deserving of the 3 points.
0141-951-1025. This show is what Monday nights are made for at the moment, because we get to reflect on what is constantly an incredible weekend across Scottish football. So what did you make of it, Celtic fans? Is that your title chase over, or can you recover from here? Rangers fans, how much better are you feeling about it, given that you won and won convincingly, and of course coupled with the fact that Celtic's result didn't go their way and you're up into second? And Hearts fans, how can we forget about you, because you're still top yet again, the 23rd of March, and you are still top. You've been there for ages, set piece kings, grinding it out at home, 1-0 wins. How's it all looking now? Give us your thoughts, please, on 0141-951-1025. This is a bit earlier than normal for a quiz section of the show, but answer me this. What significance does the weekend of the 10th of January 2026 have?
The first time and only time that all three have won in the weekend.
See, that's the standard you need to live up to on a Monday night. This guy knows his stuff. That sums this season up, doesn't it? Once this season have they all three of them won in the same weekend. One solitary time. So we talk about twists and turns.
Don't expect any more.
Are we done?
No, I don't think we are. I really don't think we are. I think from week to week, you just look at some of the trips that the three teams you speak about have to go to. Celtic now, and 2 weeks after international break, need to go up to Dundee. Not an easy game. Hearts as well, when they're at home, yes, they have done well, but they go away to Livingston, who, albeit they look as if they're obviously going to slide out the Premiership, but they'll still have a bit of fight in them and looking to have a say in that. So very interesting. Dundee United going away to Ibrox as well. You'd expect Rangers to win that game, but there could be a new lease of life in them.
Loads to get through tonight. Title race obviously taking top billing, but even once you dip below that, you look at the bottom of the table. Is that Livingston done? Is there any way back for them now, given that Kilmarnock won and opened up that gap? On the back of the conversation about Rangers at the top, how much trouble are Aberdeen in when you look at that points tally and indeed the performance at Ibrox as well? Good win for St Mirren on the road. And is it any coincidence that the Lanarkshire entertainers have suddenly become a bit more boring now that Andy Halliday's back in the matchday squad? I'll let you decide. 0141-951-1025. We're here until 8 o'clock. Let's work our way through it. And to whet your appetite, some easy choices, I think. Result of the weekend, take us away, one of you.
Take it away, Scotty.
I'll go Dundee United. I think obviously being 2-0 up last week in the derby against Dundee and throwing it away in the last couple of minutes of the game, it obviously bounced back at Tannadice with Celtic with so much to play for, to come away, pitch was poor, two good goals from their perspective and a clean sheet. It's a great way to bounce back after last week's disappointment.
I'm going to go for St Mirren. Been on a treacherous run of form since that League Cup final victory against Celtic, to the point that they're probably a lot of people's favourites to finish in that 11th spot, in that relegation playoff spot, and to factor in the fact that they're playing up against one of the stories of the season in John McGinn's Fall Cup. Not a lot of people would have tipped St Mirren at the weekend, that's for sure, but a massive 3 points in the context of this league.
Goal of the weekend, I don't think you had loads of choice. You may want to prove me wrong. You take us away, Andy, on that one.
So I'm going to go with James Tavernier. He's someone that scored loads of goals for Rangers, loads for set piece situations. It feels as if it's been a while since he scored a goal for a free kick, though, it must be said. But it's a cracker. I don't think there's one that Dimitar Mitov can get anywhere near as soon as it gets over that wall. I don't know if you noticed the guy in the wall for Aberdeen who's on the left hand side. I can't actually remember who it was, but he just stares straight on, and I think he knows as soon as it goes
doesn't
over
even
the wall,
turn round.
Doesn't even turn round at any point.
Go over the noise,
just starts walking
you?
Towards the kickoff.
No, I don't like that. That's strange. What are you going for?
Yeah, there's no going away. The Premiership goal of the week for me was James Tavernier, but I'll go with another division. League 2, East Kilbride, Bobby McLaughlin.
Oh, right, okay.
Oh, I wonder why, yeah.
It's usually Andy that brings his Motherwell bias into this. So who are you giving it to?
Bobby McLaughlin on loan from Hearts. I think Andy will know him. He's came and he's been fantastic for us since January, so puts us in a good position going into next week against top of the table clash with Spartans.
It was a good goal and it puts you top, so I will allow it reluctantly. What about your howler of the weekend though?
Aberdeen, for me, they were howling.
Just collective howling.
Yeah. I mean, listen, the one positive they get is they've scored their first away goal at 2026, but that is about all they contributed to the game. I think every game that you see Aberdeen playing a Rangers or a Celtic, you expect it to be a tough afternoon for the Old Firm sides, but it absolutely wasn't. I thought Aberdeen were so poor for the get-go, and I mentioned when I gave my result to St Mirren, they're probably a lot of people's favourites to finish the 11th spot. I never realised it was as tight as it actually was. You know, Aberdeen only 3 points ahead of St Mirren and Kelly. No, I certainly wouldn't bet against them getting dragged in.
They play next as well, don't they?
Yeah,
Aberdeen and Kelly, and there'll be so much for the St Mirren players to play for. Obviously, Stephen Robinson against his old side. But for me, Howler was the Tannadice Park. There's no getting away from it. Visually, how it looked on the television wasn't great optics and viewing. But you got to give credit to Dundee United and how they used the conditions to their own. But Celtic just didn't play it at all.
Okay.
Very easy to play against, and it's a pitch we'll be speaking about to the end of the season, I'm sure.
Finish on a positive, who was your top man of the weekend?
I think you could have gave it to a few of the Dundee United players. I thought Ross Graham was excellent, given he's obviously his own goal against Dundee in the last minute last weekend. I thought Savelge in the middle of the pitch was excellent for Dundee United, but I'm going to go for Will Ferry. Can't believe it's his first goal for Dundee United, because it feels as if he's been a threat for Dundee United over the last couple of seasons, but I thought he was terrific throughout. Nearly got his first goal just early on. Eventually does, and created chaos all day by putting balls into the box. And I thought he was excellent on Sunday.
Mikey Moore for me, obviously a standout in the game against Aberdeen. I think just in terms of how he plays, it's just I love these sort of players when they get the ball. So much intent to get forward and create. And I think he is that one player on the Rangers team, when he gets the ball, you get real excitement. Takes his goal fantastically well, and he could have a huge say in the running.
Come on then, 01419511025. It was a big weekend, and that means a big Monday night reaction from you. What are you thinking tonight? 01419511025. Calls in, send us a tweet at Clyde SSP if you would prefer that, and we will work our way through it. Of course, these international friendlies are important for preparing for the World Cup, but my goodness, I think everyone just wants this title race madness to keep on going. Richard is a Celtic fan. To kick us off, to put it bluntly, Richard, was that the end of the title chase yesterday, or can it still be done?
I don't think it was the end. You just 5 points, so what I do feel is that this club isn't the one I supported as a boy anymore. I don't know what's happened to it, but it's different.
So you mean the standards have fallen off so far that you don't recognise it?
No. If you think about like the Tommy Burns teams, and you know, like when I was growing up, I don't know what's happened. It's the board that has to go. They really have to go.
Well, that's what it does, is it brings everything into a sharp focus, a result like that. You saw the board getting it tight from the fans at Tannadice. I know what Richard's saying, he references Tommy Burns' era, but Celtic have won a lot since then. It's the more recent drop-off that I'd imagine would be alarming It's an eighth league defeat of the season. You know, so when I ask Richard, can it still be done? And he says, I mean, of course, it's only 5 points. Teams don't tend to win the league with eight defeats or more in a season. History tells you that. So was it the end of it for you yesterday?
I mean, it almost feels crazy to say it's the end of it, just given the fact that you've just said the stat, the stat that's as crazy as any. It's only been once this season that all three teams have won on a match day. So I do think that all three teams are going to dot points from now at the end of the season. But I've not felt for weeks that Celtic can win this league, and it's more down to performance levels. It's more down to the recruitment they made in January to come in and try and improve the team, because I felt that the team needed, you know, guys that are going to come in and improve positions in the starting 11 and really push others on. I don't think they've done that. I was just looking at the list there. Adamu comes on with 10 minutes ago yesterday. Araujo injured. Chavan Chara not even in the squad. And Vuka nowhere to be seen. Oxlade-Chamberlain having an hour poor afternoon at Tannadice. So I've not felt for a long period of time that Celtic will win the league. And I must say, I wasn't ultimately surprised at the performance and the result yesterday. You felt as if it's been coming for a period of time with Celtic. Yes, we've gave them credit for their character to win games when they're not playing well and scoring goals in the last minute. But I think it all just came to a head yesterday, and a lot of these sort of glaring holes that have been shown in Celtic's season, I think, was all for there to see at Tannadice.
Yeah, listen, I think, obviously, touch on what Andy said there with the... in regards to that stat that he said, it's very hard to just say they're completely out of it, but it doesn't lay them in a good position having to go to Dundee in a few weeks as well, which will be a really difficult game. They've already lost there this season. I wasn't surprised by the performance yesterday. I felt if Dundee United turned into that sort of game where they showed lots of energy and got up against people in the middle of the park, I just don't think Celtic have the profile of players when it gets that scrappy way and becomes about second balls. I don't think Celtic have the players who are better than teams like Dundee United in that area of the park. They have to then rely on playing football, which they didn't, and the quality in the final third was there to see, and it's been there to see all season, out with moments of magic from individual players. So the recruitment from the start of the season and then to top off with how it's been in January, it's left Celtic very, very short. The fans obviously vent their frustration after the game because they feel that they just haven't been backed, and Martin O'Neill hasn't been backed. But a lot does come down on the pitch. The managers and the players have got to take some responsibility, because that was so, so poor yesterday from a Celtic perspective. The individual things and that desire and fight before you even get to creativity wasn't there for me.
What did you make of it yesterday specifically, Richard?
Yesterday, I just thought, like, we've got nothing, and obviously, I don't want to, like, keep going on about it, but the final third, obviously, is... there's just nothing. Like, really nothing at all. Like, I don't know what Martin O'Neill's meant to do. I'm not defending him, because I think he's made mistakes even before today, but this squad is just... it's beyond belief how bad it's got.
Did it feel like...
it should never have got this bad.
Yeah, I was going to say, did we see a lot of the kind of issues that have been underlying? They always come to the fore again with a defeat, don't they? Because you know, we had calls last week, kind of, you know, praising Martin O'Neill, and all along people have felt that Martin O'Neill could be the difference maker. He's won it before, and this leadership and personality, and can get this team over the line. But you have to go and start Kelechi Iheanacho, who hasn't started a league game in months. Clearly not really ready to do that, or not able to contribute. But the reason you need to do that is because, and fair enough, Chavancha is ill according to Martin O'Neill, but it's not like he's been pulling up trees either. So, and they're stuck because they don't want to play Dyson Maeda through the middle because that's ineffective. It just feels like everything is sort of...
they didn't do anything.
Comes to a head.
They didn't do anything yesterday. Like, as soon as the players went out, and me and Andy have been there, you walk out and you look at the pitch, you know the sort of the way the game is going to go, and at times you're going to have to do it up back and then try and turn the Dundee United defence. They were so predictable and easy to play against from a Dundee United perspective. It allowed them to grow into the game. That was the biggest shock for me. It's as if they didn't expect what the outcome was going to be. When, as soon as you walk out in that pitch, you know, second balls, sometimes you're going to just have to hook into channels and make them defend and then play from there. Celtic didn't do that.
Yeah, just to follow up on that, so I think we've spoken about the pitch at Tannadice for a number of weeks now. They've obviously had that sort of backlog of postponements, and ever since it's almost been unplayable for teams to play a certain style of football. Now, I think Celtic can still play better on the ball than they did yesterday, but there was no diversity at their game throughout. They knew what the pitch was going to be come this game. So how are you going to try and rectify that? How are you going to try and implement something different to make it difficult for Dundee United? Everything for the course of 90 minutes was in front of Dundee United. So it allowed Dundee United to just press in straight lines, force Celtic into errors. Not once did you see Celtic play a ball in behind for Yang or play a ball in behind for Maeda, and then when Tenecki comes on the pitch to run in behind, play forward, do something different, try and make Dundee United defend. In fact, I'd probably argue the only time Celtic played in behind the full game was their best chance of the game, when Hatate puts the ball in behind for Iheanacho's chance in the first half. Everything other than that was 5 yards, 6 yards, it was sideways, it was backwards, and it allowed Dundee United to do exactly what they set up to do, and it was press straight lines and make it difficult for Celtic. So I get the frustration to the board and the recruitment in January, but Celtic had all week to prepare for this game, knowing what the pitch was like, knowing what the opponent was going to be like, and I'm left wondering what was their game plan after the game.
Thank you, Richard, who sounds pretty downbeat about it all. Thomas is also a Celtic fan. How would you sum up your feelings at the moment, Thomas?
I think it's that the last few windows have caused this, to be honest with you.
How would you describe that performance yesterday?
Oh, terrible. Absolutely. A joke. I mean, Celtic would need to win the next seven games, and even then, I don't even know if that would be enough to win the league, but there was no passion. It was out-muscled by Dundee United. Just an embarrassment. And then, obviously, harking back to the windows, but what player came in from January who's made a difference? Or last summer? No, apart from Arujo, who's injured, nobody else.
So you think that's what you're seeing is still now paying the price for bad recruitment for the last couple of seasons?
Yeah, 100%. 100%. And I don't think it's going to get any better until Nicholson, that's gone.
You said Celtic would need to win all their games, and even then you don't know if it would be enough. What chance would you give this Celtic team of winning all the remaining games?
There's no chance, probably.
When you look at it that way, so that would take them to 82 points if they won all seven games, which, you know, we don't know. But again, I think the bigger question is, can you see this next week? Yeah.
So again, And listen, we're doing that because we're talking about the context of the league, and you look far ahead how many games you need to win. But obviously, Hearts, Rangers, and Celtic will all be the same mindset, that they'll have to take a game at a time. But going into the game next weekend, yes, Celtic will be favourites, but wouldn't surprise me one bit if Dundee got a result, because I do feel as if that has been the level of performance, maybe not to that extreme at Tannadice, but I don't think their level of performances has been anywhere near good enough for 2-3 months now. At the top end of the pitch. Yes, Yang's played well in spells, and Tenecki's came off the bench and done okay in spells, but there's no one at that top end of the pitch that you can say for Celtic deserves to be a starter. There's just not. And that's the reason Iheanacho's came back in since being injured for such a long period of time, because nobody else is doing enough in that position to score the goals and be that number nine for Celtic. So I felt for a long period of time I don't think Celtic will win the league. Obviously, that certainly enhances it with that result. But the crazy thing is, with this season, you just never know.
What chance would you give Celtic of winning 7 out of 7?
I can't see them winning 7 out of 7. I really can't. I think, again, with Andy, just performance, I think as well, we're talking about on the part, but the recruitment, they've had so many misses this year. You're then relying on players who have been really inconsistent. So there is days where they can turn up, but you're Tenecki's and they can cut inside and put one in the top corner. They need more of that. They can't just be expecting, as a team, ball goes to Tenecki and the players are looking at him expecting. There's got to be a collective about it, and I just don't see that. I felt on Sunday like a team of strangers at times, and I know team selection can have an impact in that, but for me, Gordon, they're still in it, but I just can't see them winning all the games. But at the same time, I can't see Hearts and Rangers winning all their games either.
They've got an advantage, particularly Hearts. Thomas, did they get your hopes up at any point in recent weeks or months? And, you know, they obviously did win some games. Yep. Did you think it was on at that point?
Well, when we get the draw at Ibrox in the league game, and then obviously the second game at Ibrox when we won the cup, I thought, this team aren't great, but we can grind out results, we're getting there. But yesterday was just deflating. And when you're relying on Iheanacho, who plays once every, 6 weeks, and he looked out on his feet at half time, you're like, there's nobody else on the bench to come on. You're like, there's no chance in this earth. I mean, the recruitment has been absolutely abysmal, and that's what's shown just now.
But that's the thing. He is a, he's a symptom, isn't he? Really, when you look at that, he's not started a game in a long, long time.
I know, it's hard that. It's hard that. Yeah.
And that was always the issue with the signing of Kelechi Iheanacho and the why Celtic managed to get one a free transfer at the end of the January transfer window, because well,
he's had league starts since
records.
October.
But that all comes down to the panic of letting Adam Ida go, and then so that's why the board are under a lot of pressure from the fans, because of decisions like that.
Thank you very much to Thomas. Keep the calls coming. We will speak to you next. You are the voice of Scottish football. Call 0141 951 1025. Clyde One Super Scoreboard. Andy Halliday and Scott Allen are here. 0141 951 1025. A dramatic weekend, but then again, there is no other way in Scottish football this season, so let's continue working our way through it with Brian, who's in Cumbernauld. Hi Brian.
Hey guys, how are you doing?
Good, Brian. What is going on with your team? Can you still win this league? Is that it? Done? How are you feeling?
I feel like it's possible with a strong Celtic team. But I think that Martin O'Neill's tactics, I think, have been exposed. I think that he's trying to do an old style from when he first came, and it's just not happening this generation anymore.
Right, this is interesting, because we've heard pretty much everything said about Celtic this season, but very little, if any, criticism of Martin O'Neill. So you don't think this team has been coached well and managed well at the moment?
I would say that it's been managed well. I just think that his tactics, he's just using the same tactics what he done when he first came, and he's trying to do it with a different generation of people.
I don't know if he is. I mean, in terms of the sort of physicality he had in that team, very different. Brian says he's still trying to do the same things. Is that something you recognise?
What do you mean by old style, Brian? Do you mean more direct?
I'm not sure. It just seems like the players are just passing it along the box and just doing their own thing. But it seems as if they're not listening to Martin O'Neill. Like, Martin O'Neill is a good manager, but it just seems like he's... I'm not sure. I don't understand how Martin O'Neill can be as good a manager, but he's just... No one can listen to him.
Managing and coaching is two different things. Well, I do feel that management style Martin O'Neill with these young players, I think it's worked well since he's been in, and he's two tenure since he's came back. I think in terms of how Celtic set up and look to go and cause problems for our team, I think that will be down to Sean Maloney. I think he did speak about that in a newspaper last week, and then said that Martin O'Neill did have some ideas, but most of the coaching that's getting implemented, a game model would be getting done by Sean Maloney on the training pitch. But I think it's, I don't know if Andy's the same, I think it's very hard to recognise what Celtic style is at this moment in time. I don't know if they're playing just for the sake of playing, and at times when they have to be direct, like yesterday, and make Dundee United defend, they didn't do that. So that is a collective between management, coaches and players, because players as well, sometimes on a pitch it has to be player led. They've got to understand the playing conditions they're in and how to take things away from Dundee United. They didn't yesterday, and that's why it was so comfortable in the end for United.
Matthew and Brian, in terms of Martin O'Neill, I don't think Celtic are even close to a title race if Martin O'Neill's not there. I think before Martin O'Neill comes in, if it continued or it wasn't Martin O'Neill that came in, I think there's a very real possibility that Celtic aren't even third in the league, such as the quality of the starting 11 at this moment in time, given all their injuries, given the Wilfred Nancy obviously debacle when he was in charge. I think Martin O'Neill's done ever so well with what he's got at his disposal to win the amount of games that they have, even though performance levels haven't been great since he's came in. And like Scotty says there, I think he's always been open and honest in terms of the coaching and the plans in place. I think that's more down to Sean Maloney. And when you watch it yesterday, I said it before the last break, I don't really know what Celtic are. I think there's a lot of playing it around the back without any real penetration, without ever really looking to play between the lines or play it in behind. And I thought it allowed Dundee United to just press in straight lines and defend their box, which I thought looked very, very easy for them, it must be said.
Brian, we had calls last week even saying get Martin O'Neill in for the job next season. Take it you're not as convinced.
No, I'm not. I'm not convinced. I'm not sure. Like, I've not seen Martin O'Neill play when he first came here. So from what I've seen, I just don't think it would work out for him. He said himself that he's not going to do it. So I can't see him doing it.
Not to blame Martin O'Neill or not blame him, but just to go back to that last week, I just remember the call, just one call saying sit him down this week and you know, ask him if he wants the job next season. And I just remember thinking, now speaking with the benefit of hindsight, that things are just so delicate. Even if this isn't anything to do with Martin O'Neill, even if it's not his fault, it shows you how easily, in all these twists and turns, Celtic are now third in the table. So whether that's his fault or not, are you going to go and keep a manager on that finishes third in the table, if Celtic indeed do finish there? So it feels like everything is just, you're just one or two results away from, you know, everything kind of blown up again, which is, is what's happened yesterday.
No, 100%. I don't think there was ever any real possibility of Martin O'Neill being the Celtic manager beyond this season, but you quite rightly say if they go on and win the league, there'll be a lot of clamour for it. There'll be a lot of fans asking for it. But obviously at this moment in time, I don't think that's going to be the case. Now, there's a lot of talk about obviously coaching style and Martin O'Neill's team, Sean Maloney's coach, whatever it may be. We've not even talked about Celtic off the ball. You know, Celtic for the last two, three, four seasons, whether it was Ange or Brendan Rodgers, out of possession, they would press people, they'd get after them, they'd make it very, very difficult for an opposition. You don't really see this Celtic team run in terms of when they lose the ball. There's not that initial reaction to go and get the ball back. And again, how many times have we sat on this show over the last few seasons, Gordon, and we've spoken about Celtic winning the game in the first 20, 25 minutes? Even the way they're starting games, there's no real tempo, there's no real intensity. I completely get in that respect, in terms of the pitch yesterday, it might be difficult on the ball to put real tempo and intensity in the game, but off the ball.
But how much is that down to the players now at their disposal? Because we both know, I think, when it comes to actually setting up a press and your reaction off the ball, it's not necessarily a technical, talented thing that you have to have in your team. It's just taking on instruction and it being coached to be that way to set up on a weekend. That would be one of the questions you would ask of the management team, the coaching team, that it doesn't look like they have that initial bounce to get the ball back. And that's where they used to, as Andy says, in the opening part of the games, what it used to do is Celtic used to suffocate teams when they then turned the ball over, or somebody tried a through ball and it got cut out. Celtic would have that back in one or two passes. That's just completely gone this season.
We mentioned the eight defeats. It's the most defeats Celtic have had in the league in one single season in, I think it's about 26, 27 years. It feels like Celtic's off days used to result in the other team scraping a draw. You've seen it. There's control in the game, but they can't quite find the breakthrough. It's an off day. They draw the game. Celtic's off days are now, it feels like, routinely ending in defeats ultimately, and getting in defeats that are not really that close in.
Yeah, and even their average performances, it's taken them to the dying embers of games to win them. So you feel as if they have to perform very, very well to get 3 points. That being said, I can't really think that many in the top of my head how many's been really good performances this season. And if you're comparing them to the other two, which I think you have to, given it by all accounts everyone says it's a 3-horse title race, I think when games are like yesterday, I think Rangers and Hearts have so much more physicality where they can grind it out. We've all talked about their set piece record throughout the season, whether it be Hearts or Rangers. Celtic, in terms of the physicality, I think they lack it. I don't think, like we say, is out of possession a real intensity runoff. And in terms of set pieces, it's not as if Celtic are a team that's going to nick a win by a set piece either. So I think it's all it's a culmination of everything. You can point to Martin O'Neill, the recruitment, the board, whatever it may be. I don't really think there's anything functioning at this moment in time for Celtic.
Let's bring in Gary and get his take on it, where it's going wrong and where it went wrong yesterday. Gary.
Well, good evening, Gordon. Good evening, Andy and Scott. Hope you're all well.
Thank you.
Where'd they go wrong? Now, this isn't an excuse. That's just a fact. Dundee United's pitch is nowhere near the level acceptable for any level of football, to be fair. But when that game yesterday shown on Sky, and it's shown across the border to a country that already thinks your league is a bit of a joke, it doesn't do much for our kind of reputation to enhance it when that's the level of pitch. It shouldn't be allowed, by the way. That's just there should be fines or penalties for it. And again, that's not a day with the defeat. It's not an excuse. It's just. It's a fact. The pitch was a disgrace.
How bad was it, do you think?
Yeah, really bad. Really bad. I covered the game against Aberdeen a few weeks back, and it was worse, I felt, that day yesterday. Obviously, I think a lot of people were thinking it was going to be a bit better, there'd be more grass on it because we had a bit of sun last week. Obviously, didn't turn out to be the case. And the pitches are difficult when it's dry and it's bobbly, it's fiery, as you've seen with some of the touches. But there's no getting away from it. It was as bad a surface as you'll see all season. What will happen with the outcome of that, I don't know. But at the end of the day, both teams turn up on the match day. And as I says, when the Celtic players walked out and seen the pitch, you know as a player exactly how that game's going to look. And that's that's why, yes, you can blame the pitch, but the players have to take responsibility. They didn't quite understand how that game was going to look yesterday, because everybody who's played football at a level would have seen that this game was going to be about second balls and trying to make them defend in their own half, and Celtic just didn't play that way at all.
It's a hard one, because Gary is saying, I'm not blaming the pitch, I'm not saying it as an excuse, but it's hard for people, I think, to hear it and not link the two together. There was one in the first half, I just remember the ball bounced up to Kieran Tierney's neck over on the far side.
Still a wee jump.
It came back in, they tried to roll it out, and it was bouncing kind of 3 and 4 and 5 times before it gets to someone. So does Gary have a point, just in terms of take Celtic out of it then for a second, take the performance, take everything out of it in terms of who we're talking about and what we're talking about? Is that a real problem if we've got surfaces like that?
Yeah, it's horrible. It is a really, really poor pitch. I think Jim Goodwin, in all fairness, I think spoke about it on a couple of occasions. I don't particularly think it helps any team in the league. Obviously, it certainly doesn't help Celtic, where they try to play football a certain way and have the ball on the floor. But I said it earlier, Celtic knew what the pitch was going to be like going into it. So how are you going to try and combat that? What you shouldn't do is continue to play 5-6 yard bounce passes between each other, pass the ball back to Sinisalo when he's getting pressed. Yep. Not run forward to make everything in front of the opposition. So there is ways to combat it, which Dundee United did. They made Celtic defend, they played forward, they tried to play through the lines, they tried to make Celtic defend, because, by the way, as much as passing it on that pitch is difficult, defending simple balls on that pitch is difficult as well. And Dundee United made Celtic do that, and Celtic never made Dundee United do it.
Rate your title chances now, Gary.
Less obviously, but you just never know. I'm never going to say never until it's mathematically impossible. But by the way, Gordon, let me just stress that take Celtic game. That's yesterday. If that was Rangers playing there next week and it was on Sky, I still think that the pitch is a terrible advert for Scottish football in a season which has been actually great.
Absolutely.
Otherwise, but I used to be in the army 20 odd years, and a lot of English ex-colleagues who are English, sorry. And they've always slagged it. The banter was, it's a pub league, sorry, it was a farmers league up here. So it was appropriate yesterday when they were all sat down in England turning the game on, they were playing in a farmers field.
Did they have their half and half scarves on when they were watching it though, Gary? That's the real question. Come on, we've all got our faults. You tell them that.
If they needed a bit of growth up top, they should have phoned me to give them a number. You're doing all right.
Thank you very much to Gary on the line. Let's also squeeze one more in before the travel. Scott is on. How are you, Scott?
I'm all right, Gordon. How you doing, Andy? All right, Scott?
Scott.
Listen, I hope you can bear with me, the new Gordon Knight. I was saying to your producer there, take out the game yesterday, which was really, really poor, and you can blame the pitch or whatever else. This goes back to, if you go back to Brendan Rodgers when he was here, and he was about buying players, and he came out and he left, and when and that statement came out, then the French boy came in, then they done the same with buying players, and Martin O'Neill's back in. This stinks to the hilt for me, Gordon, all the way through the board. I go to the football and all the Celtic, or most of the Celtic fans sing Saga Board. We all sit there and go, no, we're here for the players, no for singing that. But you need to look at it at the point where that something somewhere's no right. You know, you buy players in January to come in who shouldn't even be wearing a Celtic top, shouldn't be on that part to put Celtic's name out there, because they're horrendous. For me, the league's gone, because at the end of the day, you know, Hearts are 5 points ahead. We all say that Motherwell was the best playing team in Scotland in this season, that's fine, but Hearts are the best team in Scotland due to grinding out the results. 1-0 here, it doesn't matter if you're winning 11-0 or 1-0, 3 points is 3 points. And the 5 points, you know, we're horrendous. And I know with Scott saying everybody's going to drop points, but 5 points is a lot. 5 points is 5 points, you know, and to grab that back and we're off to play each other, it's going to be extremely difficult.
Yeah. Because I've said this all along, no matter who's third, I think I've said it for everybody. Well, not Hearts, of course, they've not been there, but whether it's Rangers or Celtic. Yes, it's 5 points, but there's another team in between you as well. You have to take that into consideration. Okay, we always said that about Motherwell as well, didn't we? There was a wee point where everybody became fixated on the points gap between Motherwell and first. But what about the teams in between you? That makes, and Andy, your eye is just drawn to that defeats column. Of course, you can accumulate your points different ways and all that sort of stuff. Celtic have lost 8. That's more than Hibs.
Yeah. And Hibs have took a fair bit of criticism this year.
Hibs have lost 7. Motherwell have only lost 5. Hearts have lost 5. It is unbelievable that Celtic have racked up so many defeats. It feels like unthinkable given what we're used to in the last few seasons.
And I think last season Celtic lost 3 games. The season before they lost 4 games. So in the last 2 seasons combined, they've not even lost 8. For me, I've said it so many times, I'm obviously repeating myself, but I just find it very, very difficult to see Callum McGregor and Celtic lift this title at the end of the season. I really do. But the real unthinkable factor is there's a real possibility. They've obviously can't win the League Cup. They lost in the final against St Mirren. Yes, they're in the Scottish Cup semi-finals, but they can finish third. There's obviously a real chance that Celtic can finish third. And granted, the recruitment's been poor, but I'm sorry, they've got better players than Dundee United. I don't know if there's any Dundee United player that gets in Celtic's team. So you're definitely
I think Fat would have got in Celtic's team yesterday. He's been a standout for Dundee United, and at least on a pitch it was really poor. He was one that showed that he could still dribble and had technical ability to go by someone. I know the pressure's different. And listen, I understand the frustration with Scott and thinking about the 5 points, but I'm looking at Hearts as well. We still don't know what Hearts are going to look like in that split, and when the pressure really kicks in, when it gets closer and closer. That's the only thing I'll say. That's why I still think, as much as it's a big ask for Celtic to win the league, I still think there's a lot of performances there.
The kind of comparisons to this time last season, and obviously the points are way down, but it felt like every measurement you looked at, I couldn't decide which one was more surprising. After 31 league games last season compared to this season, Celtic's goal difference is 50 worse off.
Yeah, it's unbelievable.
That's
why they are, but they are.
What would you think the odds would have been a Motherwell having a higher goal difference than Celtic at this stage of the season?
Do we get a trophy for that?
I wouldn't mind that. I'd take it.
Scott says no chance of Celtic winning the league. How do you all feel? Let us know. We'll catch up next. Clyde One. On Friday, Amanda became our latest winner on Make Me A Winner. She's now £650,000 richer, and it's gone up. The payday of all paydays, £700,000. Text YES to 61025. Texts are £250 plus your standard network rate. You can enter at makemeawinner.co.uk, where you'll also find all the rules for this network competition. Or you can call 03-434-269-340, and the calls are charged at a standard rate. It's over 18s only. Lines close 5 p.m. Friday. Somebody wins the lot, £700,000. So good luck from us. Text YES to 61025.
Number one for football in Glasgow and the West. 0141-951-1025. Clyde One Super Scoreboard.
Andy Halliday and Scott Allen are here. It's 01419511025. Send us a tweet if you like at Clyde SSB, and let us know your thoughts after the weekend. Let's hear from Martin O'Neill. This is how he rates Celtic's chances of winning this title.
Today is a setback. I don't think it's the end of it. I still think that we're in it. But you're probably right. I think we'd have to win the 7 games. That wasn't that was just not good enough. Not good enough for us. When I say us, I mean Celtic Football Club. Not really good enough, and not good enough for disappointment for the fans who've arrived at the here, and disappointing for the fans from a distance. So not great at all. In all honesty, I think that we have to try and create more, and two, when we do create, I think we have to try and take the chances, you know. And that I thought, in all honesty, both were missing today.
James is the next Celtic fan on. Martin O'Neill feels you'd need to win all the remaining games. James, how do you feel?
Good evening, guys.
Hello.
Scott and Andy.
Good evening, James.
See the game yesterday, another Jekyll and Hyde performance. You tell me one player in the Celtic team that got a pass mark yesterday. The only one I would give sort of pass mark to was the goalkeeper. Don't blame the park, don't blame the state of the pitch. They were ready to do a job, and none of them showed up. So what do you do? I don't know. The league, if we go to Dundee in a 2 weeks' time, we drop 1 point, or 2 points, or 3 points, the league is gone for us. We will decide, if we lose in the next fortnight to Dundee, we will decide who wins the league, either Rangers or Hearts. And I'd like to talk about Dyson Mader. This guy was sensational last year. over 32 goals. Can you tell me when the last time he scored two goals in consecutive matches? I know it's harsh, but if they put a ball through to him at the moment, he's running in goal, the goal's empty, there's no goal there, you either put it past the post or it'll go over the bar. That's how, I don't know what's happened to that guy since he's fell off a cliff. What do you think, boys?
Was Dyson, mate, I always wondered if he was ever going to hit the heights that he did last season. He was probably always likely to drop a bit. Has he then dropped, though, more than that, at the same time as everybody around him's dropped and other, you know, is it like another example? There are many of them of just kind of everything going wrong at once.
Yeah, I think when you look at Celtic's best performers last year, Maeda, McGregor, I think when you look at how they've performed, there's no getting away from it. They're a victim of the circumstances as well.
Last season wasn't Dyson Maeda's first season at Celtic. You know, we'd seen him before and what he can give and what he can lack. He was always unlikely to do that again.
Yeah.
But has he still dropped even...
Even when he's flying and at his best, he's still capable of missing the ones he goes through. We've seen him do it. But what would happen is Celtic would create another chance and he would take it.
Or have other people to do it, chip in.
I hope this doesn't come across the wrong way. I'm certainly not calling Dyson Maeda lazy, that's for sure. But... even last season when he scored the amount of goals he scored, and we all spoke about his work rate every single week, that regardless of the minute of the game, I even think a wee bit of that's dropped off, Gordon. I don't see the amount of running power that he had last season, whether that's down to confidence or whether that's down to the way the team's performing on any given week. So I agree with you. I think it's been too big a gap between his best season to what he's currently performing. I think it's a bit of a drop off. That being said, I think you could literally say that with most. No, I think Cal McGregor's been poor for Celtic for a few weeks now. I think Rio Hatate, we've spoken about it so many times, the drop off in Rio Hatate for last season to this season has been enormous. And granted, Celtic have a lot of key players missing that would no doubt make them better. But yeah, I don't really think there's been any real consistent performance. Even Benjamin Negan, who's been the kind of only real success story, I think he divides a lot of opinion within the Celtic fan base as well.
So what do you put all this down to, James, then? Is it all these individual players? Is it something bigger?
Something bigger. I think, to be honest, if we Johnston, Carter Vickers and Jota back from the start of the season, we would not be in this position. We would not be in it. We have lost so many players for quite a long period. And we're talking, no, a two-week injury. We're talking months and months and months. Well, luck is right out the door. But as I said about Dyson Maeda, when was the last time he scored? Was it 14 games ago?
It was the home game against Dundee United, 10th of January, which was a lot of games ago. I'll go and count them for when one of these two takes over.
10th of January?
Yeah.
You know, that weekend, wasn't it?
That was the last weekend that Rangers, Hearts and Celtic all won at the same time. But did you notice that it was the same teams they played as well?
Aye, unbelievable, eh?
So it was 14 games ago, James. You know your stuff. Producer Chris has counted up whilst I was padding there. Obviously the injuries will have played a part.
Yeah, but they knew Jota and they knew Carter Vickers were going to be long term ones.
There's that balance between, like, of course they would make a difference, but what do you do? Injuries happen. If I'd said to you at the start of this, okay, these players will be injured and that'll mean Celtic potentially finish third in the league, you know, you wouldn't have equated that as being enough of a problem. So there has to be a lot more than that as well.
And I know it's really easy to say this, but they have better players than Dundee United. They have better players than the Motherwell and Kilmarnock and Dundee and the likes, where they've not performed well in games as well. So I do think that Martin O'Neill and Sean Maloney and the coach staff, I do think they should be getting more in terms of performance level at the players they've got. But listen, there's no doubt whatsoever that they're missing some key players.
Keep the calls coming. It's time for us to play this. Beat the Pundit with the Scottish Sun. For the best football news and opinion online, thescottishsun.co.uk/football. The door is ajar for you tonight on a Monday. It's usually two pundits that start on -1. Scott Allen's not that level yet, so you've got a wee chance if you fancy it. 0141 951 1025 and the lines close at 7. Taking your calls on Scottish football. 0141 951 1025. This is Clyde One Super Scoreboard. Andy Halliday and Scott Allen are here at 0141 951 1025, so keep the calls coming. Absolutely no prizes for guessing what the top topic has been. Celtic's defeat yesterday, an 8th league defeat of the season, and one which sees them slip to 3rd in the table. But as part of that, what about you Rangers and Hearts fans? How are you feeling now heading into the international break? Let us know and we'll catch up once we play this.
Beat the Pundit with the Scottish Sun.
For the best football news and opinion online, thescottishsun.co.uk/football.
It is Beat the Pundit time. Andy Halliday starts on minus one. He's not got his usual partner, Roger Hannah, alongside him. It is Scott Allen. How will he cope? It's a bit like maybe, I don't know, playing out of position. Is that how you describe it? Something like that. Maybe just throw you out of sorts. You usually get the comfort blanket of Hugh alongside you.
Depends on the question.
The calming influence of Hugh Keevans normally alongside you.
I know about getting comfort, Andy.
Go way back.
The Monday questions that have been outrageous the last few weeks. I told you I'd have lost last week if it was me.
I thought you went on a tiebreaker last Monday.
Not last Monday, ones. Roger won. But if I answered the ones,
see the ones Tony Watt's been getting.
No. The easier. The easier for everybody. I'm now pretty sure I'm being trolled by the production staff, because I've now started publicly asking in the hope that I can shame somebody to please remove all the people who've only played like once or twice from the table. But that's about 10 times I've asked and they just ignore me. So that's fine. I'll just stay silent on the matter and hope that it magically disappears, because I'm trying to look at this table. It says you're 12th, Scott Allen, but you would be higher than that once you take out all the pretenders that have only been in once. Lewis is on the line. How are you, Lewis?
Hi, all right. I'm good. How are you?
Have you ever played this before, Lewis?
Yeah, I played a couple of years ago against Jim Duffy.
And?
He beat me.
Oh, no, that's not good.
Lewis. Jimmy Duffy?
That's not good. Jimmy Duffy beats Lewis. But you've had a couple of years to study and get better ultimately, yeah?
Yep.
Good to like your thinking. Let's toss the coin. If it's the blue side of the coin, it will be Andy Halliday. And if it is the red side of the coin, it will be Scott Allen. What's up with you? Why are you looking
just
nervous?
Listen. I'm not nervous.
Okay. You better not be, because it's you in the hot seat. Bread for Scott Allen up against Lewis from Paisley. We'll give Scott Allen something else to listen to, Lewis, so that he can't hear you. You've got 30 seconds. Answer as many as you can and pass if you don't know the answer. Happy with that?
No worries.
Right, 30 seconds on the clock and your time starts now. Which Rangers player made his 150th club appearance against Aberdeen?
Jack Butland.
How many league games have Celtic lost away from home this season?
4.
Which Scottish team beat AZ Alkmaar 1-0 in Europe in August 2022?
Hearts.
Who's the top scoring Scottish player in the English Premier League this season?
Pass.
Name any of the league's top scorers from outside the top 4.
Pass.
Which former Rangers player scored for Airdrie on Saturday?
Pass.
Tough questions. They were tough, Scott Allen. Bad news for you. They're tough. Andy's right. I don't know. Maybe it's over the weekend. They just increase the difficulty level and then it tails off as the week goes.
Let's go for it.
I didn't think they were tough. Even though I'd seen them in advance, it was only as I started working through them, I'm thinking a lot of these could go either way.
Oh.
Ready?
Yeah, let's go.
30 seconds on the clock. Same set of questions, and your time starts now. Which Rangers player made his 150th appearance for the club against Aberdeen?
Raskin.
How many league games have Celtic lost away from home this season?
6.
Which Scottish side beat AZ Alkmaar 1-0 in Europe in August 2022?
The United.
Top scoring. Who's the top scoring Scottish player in the English Premier League this season?
Pass.
Name any of the league's top scorers from outside the top 4.
Simon Murray.
Okay. Your head went there. You struggled with the first couple, then your head went. I could see it. It was, wasn't nice to watch. Not going to lie. Lewis, how do you think it went?
I think he beat me by a couple.
Not so sure. Let's go through them and find out which Rangers player made his 150th appearance. Jack Butland. Lewis got it on 1-0 to Lewis. How many league games have Celtic lost away? It's 5. None of you got it. Dundee United twice, Motherwell, Hearts, Dundee. So it's 5 and it stays 1-0 to Lewis. The Scottish team that beat AZ Alkmaar was Dundee United. That's a complete guess as well.
No, it wasn't.
I could tell by your tone.
Glenn Middleton, wasn't it?
I could tell by your tone. It is 1-1. Disappointed in you here.
Aye.
Not for not getting it right, but for passing. The top scoring Scotsman in the English Premier League. It's your old teammate.
McGinn.
John McGinn. But even at that, I thought you could have chucked me a Ryan Christie or a come on. John McGinn's on four, Christie's on two. See John McGinn's goal the weekend.
Yeah. Great goal. Austin McPhee.
And in fact, Ryan Christie scored Man United on Friday night, didn't he?
Nice goal. Austin McPhee's a genius.
If they could maybe save these up a little bit for closer to the summer rather than at the moment, but that's fine. So none of you got it right, and I thought this was a really tough question. Name any of the league's top scorers outside the top four.
Jim McGrath.
McGrath, Bowie or John Jules are all on eight. Simon Murray's only on five. So it's one all, but Lewis got an extra question. Which former Rangers player scored for Airdrie on Saturday?
Adam Devine.
It is Adam Devine. Lewis didn't get it. So no. We're off to the tiebreaker. You know the questions are tough when it's one each. It's not a classic. Right, I'll ask the question, I'll get you to write the answer down, Scott Allen. I'll then invite you to give me your attempt, Lewis, okay?
Okay.
Scott, you're going to want to make this quick in case Lewis Googles it.
Yeah.
How many games has Steve Clarke managed in his career? Write it down. How many games has Steve Clarke managed in his career? Okay, get that pen going. And what are you going for, Lewis?
262.
Okay, wow.
Jeez,
a wide range. Scott's gone 500.
It's got to be Scotty.
Lewis has gone 262. One of you's only five out.
That's me then.
Five.
Well done, mate.
Bad news.
No chance.
It's 267.
No, it's no.
No, it's go not. On, Lewis. No, they should have seen the arrogance, Lewis. They were shaking hands with each other, celebrating the victory, and you have done it, Lewis. Well done,
wait,
Lewis.
Wait, that's twice I've been on a tie break, and it's been five. And chat GPT, I can tell. And twice it's been five out. It's too close.
He answered very quickly.
That
is unbelievable. By the way, it must be about near enough 100 for Scotland.
How did you know that, Lewis?
As soon as Andy turned around there and says, "Oh, Lewis," I was like, "Oh no, man! Can I be very smart?"
Exactly. They were shaking hands and everything. 74 for Scotland.
I could only think of Scotland, and then I just remember a year or two at Kelly, and then my mind just went blank. So I was going to say
West Brom, Newcastle.
Exactly. Well, only 60 at West Brom, 53 at Reading, 79 Kelly, 74 Scotland. I think they've included the one for Newcastle. So
I can't believe that.
Devastated.
They're a mere experienced man at the helm.
Unbelievable. Devastated. I know, if we get papped out the World Cup, it's because he's only managed 267 games in his managerial career. So there we go. Lewis, who's your team?
Rangers.
Right, where are you sitting then on the title race after this weekend's combination of results?
Well, before this weekend, I was kind of thinking we were out of it after the two draws against Livy and Celtic. But again, it's just twisting plans, isn't it? You just never know. But I'm definitely a lot more confident after yesterday's result.
Do you think if we had Roger here the night, we'd have got his prediction of who'd have won it?
That's why he's off. He's not away anywhere. He's just sitting in the living room. He's waiting till the last weekend to tell us who he thinks is going to win.
He likes that jumper, doesn't he?
He does
it a few times on
there. Who's going to win? What did you think about this weekend from a Rangers perspective? It's always the team that loses, the team that has a bad weekend gets the headlines or the sort of airtime, if you like, all the Celtic fans phoning. But what about from a Rangers perspective?
Well, I think you can level Rangers with the same sort of tar them with the same brush we've said at Celtic, that they have won games ugly at times recently, but I don't think that was one at the weekend. I thought they were extremely convincing. I thought they started the game really well, which I don't think they've done for a period of time. I thought they constantly put Aberdeen under pressure. I thought for the majority of the game, I thought they looked really sound defensively. I think they're starting to get some good partnerships. I think Tuor Romans and Mikey Moore on that left hand side. I think the pairing of Nasser Djiga and Emmanuel Fernandez is without doubt the starting centre back partnership at this moment in time. The only slight worry would be that again it's four goals and your strikers aren't scoring. Now, the reason I'm saying that is I think you're coming into a stage of the season where the top six best teams are playing against each other, so they're going to be tight. And I think, see, when it is these tight games and you've got Lorne Shankland on your side where you fancy him to score a goal, and then if it is a tight game, from a Rangers point of view, and you know, Yusuf Chermiti and Nadiri just aren't looking like they're going to be putting goal scores at the top end of the pitch, I just feel as if that's going to have a factor.
What makes you not so sure, Lewis? You sound a little bit confident, but not too much. What's holding you back?
I think it's just what Andy's just touched on there. I feel like if Rangers had a number 9, 15, 20 goals, it would be a very much more strong position. Like, Cyril Dessers, yeah, obviously, after Rangers, he's not had the best of an injury, that, but he scored goals for us. And I feel like if we had him and Czerny, I feel it would be in a lot more comfortable position right now.
Nothing sums up how weird this season is that Rangers fans are pining for Cyril Dessers all of a sudden. They get criticised on this show every single night. Now you're telling me he's the guy that wins you the league. What's happened here?
Well, it has been a crazy season, so it's not surprising. But listen, Cyril Dessers would score 20 plus goals a season. You can have absolutely no confidence that Youssef Chimite or Ryan Nadiri are going to be the type of strikers at this moment in time that are going to score 20 plus. Tonight, I feel like tonight's been the night of stats. We've had a few crackers. I'm going to give you one that I found almost astonishing, that Youssef Chimite hasn't scored in 28 games a season. That's far, far too many. You know, given he's probably played 34 appearances, potentially 35 at a push. You know, for your number 9 that you've had a huge outlay on, he win games and be the difference, to not score in 28 of them, that's got to be a worry.
Just picks up hat-tricks and doubles and every now and then. How many appearances did you think he had?
I'd say roughly about 34.
It's exactly 34. So, yeah.
So he's only scored in 6 games.
Yeah, I mean, Rangers have scored the same amount as Celtic, I think. And is that 2 more than Hearts? I checked it earlier on. 3 more than Hearts, Scott. So I don't know, do you take the kind of team collective? Are you still looking for more from those individuals? Is that what would not convince you or not?
No, I think first and foremost, when you look at a team winning the title, there's always a standout striker who scores the majority of their goals. What you can say about the Rangers team, as much as Chirmiti and Nadiri aren't exactly taking the chances it's created for them, the goals have been shared amongst the group, which is always a good thing. But at the same time, I think you look at Chirmiti, yes, and he talks about the amount of games he has played and hasn't scored in, but he has shown in the games, whether it's between Hearts or Celtic, in the big moments, that he does have goals in him. And these games coming up, that's the one before the split and then into the split, I do think he'll have a huge say in it. I really do, because he has shown moments in. Rangers will be happy enough as a squad that the goals are coming from full-back defenders. James Tavernier obviously still chipping in with some superb goals in midfield as well. So it is a team collective. I think it obviously helps that teams aren't exactly flying out with Hartley. Look at Celtic, they've got the same problem. Hearts out with Shanklin being out injured, and Claudio Braga, they too have been the best performing strikers this season. So I don't think that ultimately wins you the league though, just because your two strikers are scoring. I just think it helps.
We spoke about Celtic's recruitment a wee bit earlier. If you look at Rangers' recruitment in January, I think they've signed a couple of really, really proper players. I think Tor Romans has been a revelation since he's came in. I think he's been an 8 out of 10 almost every single performance. And I think Chukwuanyi is a real powerhouse, a real presence in the middle of the pitch. I think he's technically sound. I think he's good in tight areas. He's, you know, he scored 2 goals, which so he's chipped.
There's more to come for him as well.
100%. And I do, I know, me and you have kind of had this ongoing conversation, although, you know, Ryan Nadiri's not had as much criticism as Chimite with a lack of goals because he's not been in for a long period of time. And listen, he has to score more than he has. But I think I've seen stuff from him that I think he does a lot of good outside the box. I think he obviously has a big contribution for Mikey Moore's goal. I think him that lays it on for Miosky for the goal that's ruled out. So I think Rangers have made some really key additions in January that have made them better.
Thank you very much to Lewis, who's won Beat the Pundit. Scott Allen, another tiebreaker defeat.
We shoot cans, by the way.
I know. They're going to clip that up. You two celebrating too early. That's never good. Paul is on the other line. Hi, Paul.
Hi, guys. Thanks for letting me on the show tonight.
How's it going? What are you thinking?
I was just to ask Andy and Scott what they think. I don't know if one time, maybe even the show, it's just to ask Gordon as well, maybe in the summertime, whether he can have a reflection on. I know you talked to Willie Collum and you do the far show and everything else, but maybe you have some sort of representative in the studio during the summertime or something like that, because a lot of pundits and fans are kind of thinking this could be, you know, could go down to goal difference even with 3 teams in it, to be honest. And you know, I'm astonished by how many goals Rangers have disallowed this year and down to far. I think last time I looked it was maybe 15 goals back in January or something like that. Double digits now. Some of them are quite rightly disallowed, but just hear me out here. You had Alec Gogic last week against St Mirren. Handball, no penalty, right? You've had Raheem Sterling, who's jumping and
know, when you're in midair, I don't know what the guys think, but you've got to lift your arms some shape or form to build elevation, as far as I'm aware. Hits his arm, penalty. You'd Lawrence Shankland started the year at Ibrox, which was very similar to the Conor Barron incident that happened with Aberdeen. That's brought back after 20 seconds of players from Mark, goal disallowed, yet the Hearts one stands. It's inconsistency. Not if it's every game now, there's inconsistency. Even at the one with Simon Murray at Dundee, there was inconsistency in that as well. So it's getting beyond a joke, and it's you know, you talk about Farr coming into to solve problems, it's actually causing more problems. And if it does come down to goal difference, Rangers could get shafted here because of inconsistency. What do you think of that?
I think the problem with it is, Paul, so then what Celtic fans say, on the last Far review, Willie Collum said that Liam Scales should have had a penalty against Hibs in a game that Celtic lost. Hearts fans will say, and I think the guys agree if I remember speaking to them, Claudio Braga should have had a penalty at Kilmarnock last week. So the notion that, you know, Rangers could lose out the title because of a goal that they didn't get, and to sort of not acknowledge that that can happen to anybody, or that that's any different from any other season. You know, you can always look back in a season and say,
are we bringing it back, Gordon, are we bringing it back 20 seconds or 30 seconds?
Well, that's fine. If you want to talk about that specific incident, Lino, let's crack on. But I mean, the notion of that this could cost Rangers in the goal difference when Celtic will put their hands up and say, well, what about that Liam Scales penalty? Hearts will do the same with Braga. I'm just trying to make the point that everybody does that, Paul. We all, and by the way, and I've done it as well as a fan. You think that you're hard done by.
Motherwell will say they should have had a penalty in the last minute at Ibrox as well. And teams.
Oh, I'm glad you reminded me of that.
But that's what I mean. It's not like a conspiracy against one club. It's been shared. I think it's not it's inconsistency with the decisions. And
also,
I think it's
see on the subject of consistency, we should probably compare incidents that are the same, because you boys, Paul's mentioned that you boys both thought Sterling's was a penalty in the Celtic game.
Well, I think Paul actually mentions a few incidents where I think the referee got the majority of them right. Obviously, the Dujon Sterling, not Raheem Sterling on the line. For Rangers, for me, that's a penalty kick. If it doesn't hit his arm, it's going in. Now, listen, I agree, Paul, in terms of, for me, there's a level of inconsistency with some decisions. You know, I thought Simon Murray, I think he should have felt unjust given the penalties given against him last week. Willie on the Willie Show said that he thinks it was justified and it was a punishable handball. Now, we can talk about other incidents, but trust me, because having spoken to guys at Motherwell, having played at Hearts, having played for Rangers, and, you know, Celtic calls, and every single club in this country feels as if they've been hard done by decisions. And I feel as if I can, been on that show discussing that many decisions this Monday, I can actually pick out quite a few for each club, but they probably have a right to moan.
Did I see Man United saying that they might be the ones that miss out in Champions League football because of something they didn't get? You know, that's kind of just sport in a nutshell, isn't it? It's not like you're always going to be. So let's go back to the one at the weekend, though, which has obviously made Paul call, because I think I hadn't seen it live at the time, and Paul makes a good point. It's 20 seconds before. So I remember thinking, I'm looking forward to seeing this because that sounds an awful long time, and it is. But I suppose the question is, at which point do you think that attack ends?
I don't really think it does end, I suppose, because I think, is it Jensen that has the initial header? It's almost like a glancing, clearing header. I don't think Aberdeen have any kind of secure possession on it. I must admit, I think there's levels of decisions that you can moan about. Yep. This isn't one that offends me. I feel like watching the game, it was almost a wee bit too long, but the argument would be from the referees that they followed the letter of the law, that the fact that the phase of play hasn't ended.
What point?
So that's the reason,
Paul,
they went back.
It's not about a time, because otherwise that would be murder, wouldn't it? You'd say, right, it has to be within 10 seconds, then something happens 11 seconds and people say that, you know, you can't pull it back. So what they're looking for there is when the attacking phase of play stops, when it becomes a new attack. At which point in that move did you feel it became a new attack?
I just felt it should have stopped there. To me, as a viewer and watching football, it's a waste of time.
No, listen, I get that, but what I'm saying is on that, you know, for that goal to stand, it has to be a new attacking phase of play. So I'm just asking at which point you felt that a new attack started. There is no right or wrong, you know, you can tell me a point and that's valid for you. You know, it's a subjective thing.
I just think it should have just carried on, because there's so many hypothetical bits to it, Gordon.
Well, what do you mean, though?
20 seconds passed.
What do you mean?
20 seconds. Like, because there were so many. I can't remember exact
exactly in my head how it kind of all went about after that, but it was more a case of so many things happened in there, whether people were going for tackles and all sorts, that there was so many jabai in there that I just felt that, see if Farr seen it, so I just went into his ear and went, that's his hand, bring it back.
The only level of debate there could potentially be, Paul, is that the glancing header from Jensen then started a new attacking phase of play. So the referee and VAR will go back to check the attacking phase of play to see if there's any infringements within it. Okay. So Barron's handball from then to when Mioski puts it in the net, the only time the Aberdeen, or an Aberdeen player, sorry, touches the ball is Jensen with a glancing header. The referee's obviously felt that that was still part of the attacking phase of play. So it doesn't really matter how many seconds they go back, it's whether they felt that there was a new phase.
What you're looking for, again, it is subjective, there's no like hard fast. What you're looking for is, do Aberdeen get possession of the ball at any point? Do Rangers go, see if Kasama gets it and he goes right back up the line to Romans or whoever, and then Rangers go across the back four? That would probably reset. You know, if you've ever heard the VAR audio, they say APP, and I like the reabbreviation, to say this is a new attack. So they then know that anything that happens from that point on is considered worthy of, you know, going back to look for. Is there a point that you think they could have? What makes it too long? Because the 20 seconds thing, there is no, you know, there's no time limit. Is there a point that you think it should have kind of reset? Because that's the way it has to be, you know, whether we like it or not.
Yeah, like, I understand the timing thing, because you're sitting and you go, that the first reaction of everybody, that's 20 seconds, that's 25 seconds, whatever it was on the night. But yeah, it's hard to argue, because I think, as especially as someone who's played the game, I think the inconsistency for me is going from one week to another with these decisions. So at times it even clouds your judgment, because you don't quite know what one referee is going to pick. It generally changes week to week in every club.
I think you can take this one in isolation and say that either same attacking phase of play or it wasn't.
Yeah, I think from then, as soon as he touches the ball, then they're looking at it as an attacking phase of play and a chance for them to go. And they probably do get to the right decision. But I understand the frustrations of fans and obviously players. I just think come next season, there has to be so much more clarity so that we have a solid baseline to go off. I just don't think we have that.
That's my point, though. Next season, that decision, I think, will be the same, no matter what you discuss.
You think so?
Well, unless you can say...
Are you talking about the handball?
Yeah.
Scott's talking about the actual handball.
Oh, you don't think that's even a handball?
That's what I'm saying.
I didn't think that was up for debate.
It's not. That's what I mean. I just find it really hard now, going week to week. One minute you're saying it's a handball, the next week the other referee in the VAR saying it's not. We've seen so Shanklin's back at Ibrox.
But I think I'll need to watch that
there's
back.
But
I think that was at the time was said that was a mistake.
Yeah, it was. But
so you know, you can't then.
But the only thing I would say is that the Dundee United won the derby last week. So his arm's clearly in an unnatural position. It's above, it flicks his hand.
Yeah.
So I think that's it, because that for me is an unnatural position. Now it's not out, but
Andy's
it's
acting this out for anyone who's listening in
so
radio.
I've got a bar in hand. But again, that could then be levelled for me at Dundee United's last week, where his arm's above his head.
Yeah.
Now,
because the ball comes behind him.
Yeah, the ball comes through. But see, for me, I think the handball one, I think we're in a better place than we were two or 3 years ago, where every single time the ball touched somebody's hand, it was a penalty kick. It's so difficult to get it.
Sure, but I think where we're going, I didn't think the Conor Barron incident was a debate about whether it was a handball. I thought it was a debate about whether it had been pulled back for too long.
No, I was just referring to, obviously, Scott talking about the inconsistencies in terms
Scott's
of
just
handball.
Muddied the waters, basically. And anyway, thanks a lot to Paul, 01419511025. We take more calls next.
Tackle the headlines. 01419511025. Clyde One Super Scoreboard.
Scott Allen's here alongside Andy Halliday, and it's still plenty of time left for you to call us on 01419511025. Before we go any further, I've got a teaser for you two.
The full-time teaser with Arcaplan Glasgow. Planning permission and building warrants drawings for home extension, conversion or renovation.
Good question, this. Grant in Dundee, given Celtic's recent relationship with Dundee United, and they're going to have to go back to that same street in a couple of weeks. Can you name the six highest scoring Dundee United players this century who are not Scottish? This is a really good question. because I can see the answers, obviously. So who are the top six highest scoring Dundee United players this century? So you've got quite a big window. Who are not Scottish?
Can I give you one?
Yes.
Sam Dalby?
Nope.
John Daly?
Yeah, John Daly's top.
John Daly, I played with him.
Sam Dalby's actually not that far away, and he was only here for, was it one season?
Yeah.
So that tells you what you're dealing with.
Nadir Chiefchi?
He's second, well done. Daly then, Chiefchi. One more guess.
How many, sorry?
Six.
Six.
Okay, we'll give you thinking time. That's too long for me. Let's go back to the phones where Thomas is waiting. Thomas, talk to us, all things Celtic. What's happening?
What's happening is a whole lot of absolutely nothing. First of all, good evening, Gordon, Scott, Andy. How are we?
Good, thank you. How are you, more importantly?
Well, on one hand, good. On another hand, not so good. I'll start with the good, which is, Gordon, I have a mutual acquaintance of yours, Kieran Burns. I play alongside Kieran Burns in Perthshire football up here in Scotland. And on Sunday, we just won the Scottish Premier League. So that's the positive.
Good on you, Thomas. Congratulations to you and your teammates.
Thank you very much. Now, unfortunately, Martin O'Neill and the Celtic team will not be winning the Scottish Premier League this season. Unless, and this was my point, I think it's still possible on the basis that we get our act together for the remaining seven games and play like a proper football team. But what I'll say is, nothing I've seen so far this season gives me any confidence outside just being a somewhat delusional, you know, blindly loyal Celtic fan that thinks, oh, we are brilliant, we'll do it. Beyond that, I've nothing to actually make me think we would do it. But I think if for seven games we can wake up and play like a proper football team, I think Hearts and Rangers have equally struggled this season, and if they continue to struggle and Celtic get their act together, I think it's still there. But like I say, it's a tall, tall order at this point.
I love that honesty from Thomas. I think Celtic can win the league, but I'm just delusional and I'm not basing it on anything, was the gist of that, which is good honesty. What would it take, you know? Can this, I think, the same group of players in this sort of same formation and this same, can they spark into that? Because even when they were winning games there, you know, it never perhaps looked that convincing. We said about scoring late many times and how that can be good, you know, it can be a good sign of character, or never say die attitude or whatever, but ultimately over the 38 games in a season, that kind of maybe does catch up with you.
Yeah, I mean, I can't see it, but for me, what would have to happen is if Iheanacho can somehow get really fit in the next 10 days.
I mean, how big are these ifs, though?
I know, but listen, I'm giving you my honest opinion. If Dyson Maeda can find the purple patch is hard. The form that he found last season, and if Yang can put on a more consistent basis, a performance that Yang showed in flashes, he can be a good player for Celtic. Can he put that into a more consistent basis and do that over the next seven games? If that top end of the pitch alone, so take away the midfield, take away the back four, that top end of the pitch alone can click into gear, or somewhat click into gear, then it's possible that Celtic can win the majority of the games. I don't think it's enough to win seven out of seven, though.
Yeah, I think top end of the park is obviously where the big question marks are. I think you look at the performance over the last couple of months, yes, you're scoring goals in the last minute, but overall Celtic have hardly performed for 90 minutes throughout the course of a season. It's just been patches within games, a lot of chopping and changing. Obviously we spoke about the injuries they're missing. And at that top end of the park, if you're not necessarily defending fantastically, then you need to rely on a connection between, whether it's a midfielder and a wide player and a striker. I just don't see that throughout the team, and I haven't for most of the season. But what I would say is, when it comes down to the nitty gritty, and if they can get past Dundee, I think that's going to be a really defining moment for Celtic. If they can get past Dundee, then I think it's St Mirren at home and then into the split, and maybe Hearts or Rangers drop points, and you're right back in it. I think that is the way we're looking at
not
it.
Not 1-7 in a row this season, obviously.
No.
Or even that close. Maybe Martin O'Neill's first spell, they've come semi-close to that, I would imagine.
The Nancy spells has killed them.
How many times I've lost what I was going to say.
That's not like you. You usually go in full flow.
What's I going to say that?
Do you know what happens at half six, half
no,
seven?
No, that's what I was going to say. How many times this season has the team that's performed on the Sunday dropped points?
Oh, I don't know. That's not a stat. Is that a genuine question?
But Scotty said the next game week. So Rangers are performing on the Saturday. And I think Hearts are the earlier kickoff of the two on the Sunday. And then it's Celtic away at Dens. Mm-hmm. I feel like so often we talked about Hearts being the two big winners in the 2 weeks in consecutive mm-hmm. for Rangers and Celtic drop points. The Sunday, they get their job done the Saturday. It was Hearts who were the last on the Sunday against Kilmarnock, drop points. It was obviously Celtic yesterday. I feel like so often over the last couple of months or so, it's been the team that's played on the Sunday that's ended up being the ones that are dropping points.
We're bringing the clock into play here.
That's Sunday's fault.
That's how tense it's getting. Sure. Thanks very much to Thomas. What about John on the other line? How would you sum up how you're feeling, John?
I really thought it was April at first this morning. Martin will come about that statement. I thought it was an April Fool. He'll never win the seven games. Never. He's got a team full of donkeys. As I say, he's got two guys there that's left their own team. They didn't want him. Arsenal, Tierney had to leave. And because he was finished, and Oxford Chamberlain on $100,000 between the two of them a week, £100,000 is a lot of candy at Celtic. They can't defend. There's a couple of guys now defence that can't defend, and they've got guys there that can't score goals. They've got three forwards, and they couldn't make a forward up out the three of them. The Czech boy, the boy was on yesterday, and that Arabi boy they chased for don't know how long they chased him. I've chased him right out the door. The other point is, there's two Celtic fans standing waiting to talk to him yesterday, and not one of them could go over and talk to the boys after that performance. Now, they'll never win in seven games because it's all down to the board. The board's cost us over the last three transfer windows. Roger seemed it was in front of him. He said, I'm away. I'm not going to be taking the flag for this kid on it at Park Ead. But a shambles, mate. One shambles. After treble. My season pick will be going up about another £50 or £60 next season. I see it's a shambles just now. That's my point of nightmare.
Quite a lot to work through, from wildlife to not signing autographs to the board, the transfer windows. I actually wondered if we would. You guys have been players and been hunted for autographs. Again, just it feels like everything that Celtic are not getting right at the moment, and they just add something new to the list. Video of players not stopping for fans, and it doesn't look good. Or is that? What did you make of that? I can't believe we're now analysing these things.
I mean, the visuals aren't great. It's hard because you don't know the context of it. But I'd say this to players still to this day. You were once that young boy that stood outside and tried to get an autograph for a picture. One player in my lifetime when I was growing up refused a photo for me, and I remember it now, and I'm 34 years old.
Who was it?
So just, I'm not. I can't say.
Oh, come on,
Barry Ferguson. So just do it.
No,
was it your hero?
Was it actually?
Oh, I pulled them up when I went to Blackpool, but we since patched it up. But just go. I know, especially after a disappointing afternoon, a disappointing result, just go and take the picture, sign the autographs. It's two young boys that have obviously waited for a long period of time. But like I said, it's different. You don't know the context, you don't know what's happened, but obviously visually it didn't look great.
Tell you what, well, I tell you, this has just came back to me. I forgot I received this over the weekend. I should have got this for the big screen. I'm kicking myself. Do you know who the Celtic players could learn from? Look at this athlete. Saturday, pizza in one hand, signing autographs in the other.
See what I mean?
Outside Fir Park. Look at that. Someone sent that to me on Instagram saying, look at this athlete, Mr. Halliday. Didn't even play, so I don't know if you're allowed to tuck into the pizzas, and he's signing autographs with a bit of pizza hanging out his gob. Look at that.
I expect the pizza to be there.
My dinner as well.
There we go. Yes, I don't know, Scott, if you've got any thoughts on that, you want to move on to talk about some of John's other points?
Yeah, I would agree with Andy. It never looks good. Context obviously has to be taken in, but I think when you're a player and you're walking out and you see two young kids there looking, I think I was one of the kids as well when I was younger who would always look for autographs after a game, so you were the young kids as well at one time, so it should always be the first kind of thing you do when you walk out and you see kids. Different if it's fully grown adults, but when it's kids there's a difference to it because you always put yourself in
I have
in
no idea, and I don't know if we need to spend a lot of time over analysing this. I've never is there a chance that you're told just hurry up, get on that bus, go? I don't know.
I'd still have a decision to make though, think yourself.
On a more sort of normal point for us to debate, John's picked out a couple, and I have no idea about the wage structure exactly, but is Kieran Tierney high up on Celtic's list of issues this season? I just didn't expect his kind of name to be thrown in.
I thought he started extremely slow the first couple of months. Obviously, there was he couldn't complete in 80 minutes. I think that was down to kind of a programme for Celtic, but he was playing 60 minutes and coming off the last half hour. I think probably since the turn of the year, maybe December, January time, I think he's hit a bit of performance. Well, I think he's got a fair amount of goal contributions. I think he's second in the assist table. I don't think he's one of the bigger issues, but... Listen, it's, I don't know, but if people were expecting the Kieran Tierney pre-£25 million transfer to Arsenal, then maybe it's an issue. But no, I think in the context of Celtic's team man season, I think he's been one of the kind of positives, to be honest.
A team of donkeys, transfer windows going wrong, couldn't make a forward out the three strikers that are there. Scott, John has put a fairly grim picture on things.
Yeah, and John's allowed his opinion. He's obviously paying his money to go and watch Celtic week in, week out. There's no getting away from it. I think in that forward area, there's no one that gives you real excitement when they get on the ball. And I think that's one of the prerequisites that you would expect from a Celtic winger, first and foremost, to then create for your number nine. The problem is with the number nines, you just don't see enough of them in the box and they don't look as if there's any real killers there. That's off the back of having someone like Kyogo, who was consistently fantastic for Celtic, and he wasn't just one-dimensional. He could come link the play, he could spin and bind, and then you've seen some of the special goals that he scored over the years.
Thank you to John on the line. Quickly, how are you in this teaser? The Dundee United top scorers this century who are not Scottish: John Daly, Nadir Chiefchi,
Louis Moult.
Yes.
This one's a bit more of a stab at Scott McDonald.
Yes.
Oh, well.
Two to get. We'll get them next. And what about you, Hearts fans? I'd like to hear from you as well. Give us a call.